My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The United States Navy in the 21st century. Right now, we're looking at crises around the world and what is to be done. A new article at the Atlantic Monthly, America's Future is at Sea, by Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy aviator retired at the Sagamore Institute, tells the story of inadequacy, inadequacy today, inadequacy tomorrow, and how soon that can be filled will determine the ability of the U.S. to contend in the Indo-Pacific against the rising power of the People's Republic of China and the Atlantic and the considerable sting capable of the Russian Navy with their submarines warfare and especially with their ability to enter into the Atlantic and to roam in a fashion that takes them up to the continental United States. Jerry, a very good evening to you. Congratulations for your piece in the Atlantic. It's historically well-founded. I want to begin with the problems, though, the problems that the Navy has around the world that, my understanding, cannot now be answered by the fleet extant. We begin with the problem most immediately in the North Atlantic, because that dates back to the Cold War of the 20th century. What is the gap? And what does it mean that the U.S. Navy needs to fill the gap coming out of the North, coming out of the Russian fleet in the North? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So the gap that you're referring to is the Greenland-Iceland-United Kingdom gap, the GIUK gap. And, you know, and we're really talking about two gaps. We're talking about the geostrategic gap of that that transit strait where the Russians come down out of their bases in the high north to penetrate down into the Atlantic. During the Cold War and now increasingly today, we're concerned about their ability to bring their high-technology submarines, they're essentially fifth-generation submarines, and push down into the Atlantic and then interdict U.S. or Canadian ships that are trying to bring relief or manpower or supplies from North America to Europe. I mean, it's important to understand that NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and there is no NATO without control of the North Atlantic. And so the Russians have specifically targeted technologically these submarines that are of very high quality to have the ability to come down and be able to sink U.S. Navy ships, but perhaps more importantly, sink troop ships and supply ships that would be bringing vital, much-needed supplies to the European continent. This is something that we worried about significantly just a few years ago. We've war gamed this repeatedly. And now that Russia has moved aggressively into Ukraine and you know has given threatening statements about the Baltic nations and Poland and some of the other allied nations in Europe, this is something we have to be very concerned about. So when we talk about that gap, we talk about it geostrategically. But John, we're also talking about a gap in terms of shipping, the fact that we have a gap in the number of ships that are required to properly police and protect the North Atlantic to keep the sea lines of communication open.
To the South Atlantic, recently in the news, two Iranian warships made port-a-pau in Rio de Janeiro. The question is Russia and is China and their ally Tehran, are they projecting into the South Atlantic to South America, and can we answer that?
Absolutely. Both all of these nations have a resentment about the ability of the United States to range the world, the fact that our Navy and our military forces have been global and worldwide and providing presence and deterrent capabilities all over the world, including for the last 70 years in these three nations' backyards. The Iranians really resent the fact that we operate in the Arabian Gulf. In fact, they resent the fact that we call it the Arabian Gulf, while they call it the Persian Gulf, hearkening back to their own historical ties with that region. The Chinese are very frustrated that we come into the South China Sea or the East China Sea and operate, And the Russians have always been upset that we've been operating in and around the waters of the North Atlantic or along the Pacific, along their shores. And so what they tried to do is bring that pressure to bear upon us and they begin to operate in and about the Caribbean, as well as down and around South America. And this plays on some concerns that we've had historically. You know, John, we had the Monroe Doctrine that said essentially that we would be the dominant power and try to have the foreign policy lead in the Western Hemisphere. And then there was the Roosevelt Corollary, which said that the United States would take the lead in sort of maintaining order in the Western Hemisphere. These moves by Iran, China, and Russia to operate in and around the Western Hemisphere, in around South America and Central America, is a direct threat to U.S. interests. But quite frankly, it's a threat that we've allowed to happen because we no longer have a Navy large enough to police our own backyard while at the same time maintaining our interests elsewhere in the world.
To the Indo-Pacific, the Sea of Japan, the South China Sea, the vast Indo-Pacific, particularly in and around the Solomons and New Guinea. Right now, the Navy is doing what it can to patrol and show the flag. Is it adequate to the threat, Jerry?
Well, absolutely not. Even though we have Destroyer Squadron 15 operating out of Japan, as well as with a carrier strike group and an amphibious ready group coming out of Japan and operating in and around the waters of the Sea of Japan, the East China Sea, South China Sea, and even with the operations that we have with U.S. Third Fleet pushing out across the Pacific, we no longer have the fleet of sufficient size to protect all those interests. When you talk about the Solomon Islands, understand that the U.S. still has, close ties, if not territorial ties, with many of these island states that are across the Pacific. We know that Guam is a territory, but we also have close ties with Palau and other federated states of Micronesia. And so they're looking to us whether we'll support their interest and protect their security. And quite frankly, we haven't had a fleet of sufficient size to do that. And so increasingly, they have begun to tilt towards China with banking ties as well as commercial ties. And this has been a movement that's of our own making.
Finally, and not the last, just the biggest that came to my attention, is the Arctic Ocean. Right now, they're plotting passageway through the Arctic Ocean because of climate change. But when you look at the map, you see all these dots of Russian projection of power bases and ability to do exercises in the north. You see almost nothing on the NATO side. Is the Navy being asked to patrol the Arctic Ocean now, Jerry?
Well, the Navy is being asked, but the problem is the Navy doesn't have the capability. Russia is actually making territorial sea claims over the Arctic. They are pushing what we call baselines and advancing territorial claims, essentially calling the Arctic Ocean in this great northern route that runs along the north side of Russia, which they want to use to move tremendous amounts of energy, liquefied natural gas and petroleum along the north side of Asia and then down to China. They want to call those internal waters. And in fact, they're making some applications of the law of the sea, the Convention on the Law of the Sea, to support those claims. The problem is the United States, which has been the primary defender of the free seas and free navigation on the high seas, hasn't built a warship that is Arctic rated since the mid-1950s, a point that I made in my Atlantic essay, nor is our submarine population, which had once been, majority of it was rated to operate in the Arctic under the ice. We're seeing a declining population of those submarines that can operate up there. And so we are losing our hold on the Arctic, and we will have a lack of a capability in just a decade or so to even police or uphold our interests or the interests of our allies in the Arctic. So the Arctic is increasingly being contested by Russia. And again, they are asserting territorial sea claims over the Arctic Ocean.
Sea power. Why sea power? Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy, retired aviator at Sagamore Institute, writing most recently at the Atlantic Monthly. America's future is at sea. When we come back, the sea power that you shop. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Mashman.